It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
In the next few weeks, we are coming into a holy time on the Jewish calendar, an important time on the biblical calendar, the celebration of Passover and Shavuot, Feast of Weeks, or Pentecost. And in the days leading up to that, I'm going to be doing some teaching, opening up what the scriptures say about Jewish roots, taking your questions. But today, we're hoping to get a live update from Jerusalem, from one of our spiritual sons planted in the land there, married to a Sabra that is a native-born Israeli, to talk to you about what's happening in Israel. So hopefully we'll have Kobe Ferguson on the line with us in a little while. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire. I'm also going to give you some thoughts on chocolate cake. Yeah, chocolate cake. You say, what in the world? Just stick around. Stay with me. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. You can email me directly at Dr. Brown. That's drbrown at askdrbrown.org. Also, today's a great day. If you have questions on anything having to do with Israel, the Jewish people, Jewish roots of the faith, Jewish-related questions, believers in the law, etc., I'll try to get to calls on these subjects as well. 866-34-TRUTH. So if you've got questions relating to Israel, Jewish people, etc., you've got questions, we've got answers. Okay, first, chocolate cake issue. Maybe you could shed some light on this for me. We had a delightful birthday dinner last night in an Italian restaurant in Pineville, North Carolina, called Buca di Pepo. When I was in Denver Seminary teaching last year, I was taken out a couple nights by faculty to the restaurant there, found out there was a branch here of the chain in my area, North Carolina. So we went. You got to go there with an appetite. I mean, it's kind of amazing amount of food. So we ate, and then of course got dessert, and of course chocolate cake, my favorite. And I've wondered about this for years, but you can get all kinds of really high calorie, intense desserts of all different flavor. But if it's chocolate, it's got to be death by chocolate, or chocolate suicide. Or this is decadent chocolate cake. Last night was sinful. So could somebody tell me why it's only the chocolate desserts that are death, suicide, sinful, decadent? You can eat as much of the other stuff as you want and seems to be fine. But when it's, you got to try our death by chocolate, it's sinful. It's like, why the chocolate stuff? Anyway, it's just a question. Maybe you have an observation that you'd like to share with me. We may even take some calls on that too. All right, straight to Jerusalem. Kobe, great to be with you, man.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks. Hey, I understand you had a birthday in your household yesterday also.
We sure did. Our little 3-year-old Lahav shares birthday of a pretty famous guy.
And what does Lahav mean?
Well, Lahav literally means the blade or a flame of fire.
Yeah.
Lahava or Lahavot, which are flames.
Yeah, so it's a good fire name in with that part of the meaning. Now, you weren't always Kobe. When you were a student of ours in Pensacola, you were Jam or James when God called you to Israel. James, of course, is Jacob, Yaakov, and hence the nickname Kobe, which fits. I like that. So how long have...
It makes as much sense as an Alabamian moving to Israel.
All right, so let's first look at that. You met Shani. She's a native-born Israeli. Her mom and dad are in Shira Sokaram, very well-known in Jewish Israel ministry for decades now. When you met Shani, did you know that you had a calling to the Jewish people? Here you are, as you said, an Alabamian in school in Pensacola, Florida.
No, I mean, actually, I didn't. I had just come to the Lord a couple years before that. I started having a heart for Israel and the Jewish people, and then coming to the School of Ministry where you headed up. Obviously, we got pumped full of good Israel doctrine and a real heart for Israel. And so it started to stir, but no, not on any level that I realized. I didn't even realize Shanine was Jewish or Israeli when we first started kind of developing a relationship. It was only because her English is so perfect. So it took some time for all the pieces to kind of come together and realize, wow, I'm not just falling for an Israeli. God connected me with the Jewish people.
Amazing. Yeah, a real life connection, giving birth now. Shani giving birth to your kids in Israel as Sabras, native-born Israelis, and you speak Hebrew pretty fluently these days, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Just listen, man, when I first met you and got to see you as a student, if someone told me a few years down the line you'll be married to an Israeli speaking fluent Hebrew and ministering effectively in Israel, I would have said that would be a surprise. So what a delightful surprise.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, I really do. I resemble the scripture that God uses the foolish things of this world to confound the wise. And so it's a pleasure to be here and an honor to be ministering in Israel. But yeah, you just really never know what God will do and where he'll send you to once you just jump in and give your life to him.
It's the truth. It's absolutely the truth. What happened the other day? You posted something about something interesting being broadcast from the minaret, from the mosque there in Jerusalem. And I guess, tell us about the volume, too.
Yeah, you know, there's been a building tensions the last few weeks. It was very interesting. I wrote in my Facebook status an experience I had the other day, last Friday, actually. And then, of course, subsequently, things have pretty much exploded in the area. But I was just driving to Tel Aviv from Jerusalem, passed by, actually down the street from my house, a minaret or a prayer tower, and the volume was turned up louder than normal, which, by the way, I've been in Jerusalem now almost 2 years, and since I've been here, the volume on these prayer towers, which they pray, you know, to facing towards Mecca, you know, five times a day, the volume has increased probably double. Where I live, I could barely hear it. Now I can hear it clearly every time they pray. So it's known across all of Jerusalem area that the volume is going louder and louder and louder. So I'm stopped in what I think is a traffic jam, and I hear, I know very little Arabic, but I can understand certain, especially hot buzzwords like shahadim, which is martyrs, and jihad, and kafil, you know, infidels. And,
uh-huh.
You know, even the word Hillary Clinton, I heard very loud and clear. And Americans, very loud and clear. So I rolled down the window and said, this isn't even the hour for prayer. What's going on here? So very loudly out of one of the minarets was a call for jihad, the best I could understand it, railing on Americans and even mentioning Hillary Clinton. Of course, I don't speak Hebrew, Arabic fully, so I don't understand the exact context, but definitely was a call for unrest on some level. So, and then immediately afterwards, police cars rushing by and shutting down whatever was going on there. So I don't know if Uncle Ahmad, the radical, had kind of taken over the mosque for a couple hours or what. I don't know.
And you're actually hearing this more and more, that radicals are actually taking over the prayer tower. And I should mention, both you and I are drummers, so we don't mind volume. When you say that these... these speakers are really turned up. I mean, you mean they're really pumping stuff out. It's not like Islam is quiet about its faith.
You know, you can hear these things for quarter mile, half mile away, and they're strategically placed. And it's, you know, in my opinion, one of the worst mistakes Israel could have done to allow these things. There's even countries now, even very liberal nations like Switzerland, for example,
right,
who forbid the building of these prayer towers, because it is, and there's never been a case in history where there has been any moderate action from Muslims. The minute they start building these things, it's a part of their modus operandi to take over an area and literally take over through the airwaves first.
And you said that
it is extremely loud.
And you said that recently that from time to time, radicals will take over and just start, instead of just the prayer call, which you recognize because it's the same thing every day, they start preaching some radical message through the loudspeakers.
Right. We have, you know, everybody's required to serve military, and a lot of people are, instead of going to the military, they're going to the police. So if we have friends and all kinds of people that are in police and military, and they say, yeah, it happens from time to time. It's known, especially in Jerusalem area, that radicals will take over. It's shut down pretty quickly, either by their own people, because they realize, hey, you know, Israel's going to come and shut this down. It's just not a good thing. Or, like I witnessed, you know,
The Israeli police coming by and
you know, commandeering the mosque back. You know.
All right. Hey, listen, Kobe, we've got a break here. We come back, I want to talk about rising tensions in U.S.-Israeli relationships, as well as what God is doing in Israel these days. Stay with us, and if you've got questions for Israel, now's a great day to call. Welcome back to the Line of Fire. Michael Brown speaking live with Kobe Ferguson from Jerusalem. He and his wife, Shani, and family on the front lines of ministry there in Israel. 866-34-TRUTH if you'd like to ask him or me a question relating to Israel or the Jewish people today. Email me directly at Dr. Brown, Dr. Brown, and askdrbrown.org. Kobe, how long have you lived in the land total? And you're in Israel, then out for a bit, and then back in?
For close to about 10 years.
All right, that's amazing. And I guess you've seen a lot of American Christians come over kind of starry-eyed, or maybe from other countries too, and they're going to change the world, and God gave them a mission to save Israel. Do you see a lot of flaky stuff there in Jerusalem?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of well-meaning people come over, and, you know, the Holy Land, you know, well, the people aren't holy yet, and there's spiritual warfare here that is pretty intense, and to such a degree, I remember being on my honeymoon and looking at one of the tourist magazines, a tour book on the coffee table in the hotel, and they literally had a section in there called the Jerusalem Syndrome.
Right, I was going to ask you about that.
This is not a believing, you know, this is just a secular tour guide, and they go through the different things, and it says, you know, here's symptoms of what they call the Jerusalem Syndrome, which is there's an actual ward in the Hadassah Hospital, largest hospital in Israel, for these mental cases, and they call it Jerusalem Syndrome. And I'm reading, and it says in the most favored personalities of the Jerusalem Syndrome are John the Baptist and Elijah. And they're basically well-meaning Christians that come over, tour the land, and all of a sudden get these delusions of grandeur that they're a biblical character. And I thought, wow, you know, Toto, you're not in Kansas anymore.
Yeah, John the Baptist is still, Elijah's still leading the way. So this, I mean, this happens enough that they actually have a ward in the hospital. People come over and they think that they are Elijah the prophet. They've got this end time revelation. So just as truly as people are called to Israel, there's a lot of flaky stuff. By the way, the warfare is real. We'll have on our website the link to your website, YeshuaIsrael.com. I just was looking at it, Kobe, and you've got a video there, Bomb Squad in My Playground. What's that about?
Definitely. That's something just happened a couple weeks ago. I'm picking my wife, Shani, up and our children from just the playground just down the street from us, and she calls and says she happens to have a video phone with her. And she records the whole thing, so we posted it on YouTube and on our website. But basically, there was a suspicious object in the playground, and they had to call the bomb squad to detonate it. We're not sure what it was, if it was benign or it was a real explosive, but these are the kind of things we live with every day. And you're taught here from a child up that if you don't leave a backpack, you don't leave bags around, nothing. Remember my brother-in-law, that he lost his backpack, and he got it back the next day, and it had been blown up by the bomb squad. So you're taught not to leave anything around, or it becomes a suspicious object. That's just par for the course here. It's just everyday life. But yeah, we did post that online for people that want to see it.
Right, YeshuaIsrael.com. So this is normal life in Israel. I'm scheduled to do some flying again next few days. So you go to the airport, you gotta go through security, the whole bit. Do you have anything like that, say, when you go into a shopping mall in Israel?
Well, if you go into a coffee shop, if you go into any kind of supermarket, if you go into any kind of mall, any kind of public event on any level. You will be greeted. If you're driving your car, they'll open your trunk, they'll look in it. They even might ask you a few questions, public parking, everywhere. So what's just become, you know, part of American culture, I guess, since September 11th is just part of life here everywhere.
Yeah, and it's barely part of, right, it's part of American culture in the most select way. And I'm saying that because most Americans really have no clue about daily life in Israel, and every place you sit down, you see a soldier there with a gun, and that's just life. So Netanyahu and his government have said, we're going to keep building in Jerusalem. We have families expanding. We have needs, so we're going to keep building housing. Vice President Biden, President Obama clearly weighed in against this. Secretary of State Clinton, the papers in America and Europe writing about the rising tensions between the government in a very extreme way, beyond what we've been used to seeing for quite some time now. So can you give me, in short, the perspective from Israel's side and how intense this dispute seems to be between the governments right now?
Well, you know, let's just say there's solidarity in a lot of ways, even with there's an extreme left faction of the government in Israel. And these are people that just, you know, they're dedicated to land for peace. They're as liberal as anything you can see in the state, and maybe even more so to some degree. And all of these parties have come together and have said, this is ridiculous. The areas that were even posted, you know, while Biden was here that became controversial, this is Jerusalem. Even the furthest left, even Palestinian political leaders have said this is something that's exaggerated, because they realize once the facts become inspected, wow, they don't really have any grounds to stand on. And so there's definitely a polarization happening, you know, between, I think, even the worst than there's been since the 70s, but really, life goes on as normal here. I mean, the bigger issue was, as America is kind of tipping their hat towards what is viewed as a more radical Islam, you know, even, you know, really kind of willing to go around the bend one more time with Iran and let's give them more time. And we're saying, hey, this is a serious situation. You're being very picky in how you're viewing Israel and their expansionist, you know, philosophy here. But there's a real existential threat towards the state through nuclear warfare. Can you kind of give us a break here? But it's interesting, as Israel is being, there's a lot of pressure being put on Israel to stop the settlement. And the areas that they're building are literally right now that have come under fire are in Jerusalem proper. It was just down the street, not a huge area, just a little neighborhood where they're building, and they happened to post some advertisements that the neighborhoods were being built at the same time the Vice President of America was here. And so it was stapled to a lot of different events that have been brewing here, mainly the reestablishment or the rebuilding of the Horva Synagogue here. And all these different events were stapled together. What's interesting is that radical Muslims here will say, we don't take our cues from America or anybody. We follow Muhammad and the Quran. But yet, when America starts to posture itself away from Israel, that's when you see more clashes, calls for violence, calls for rights. So it does show you the political power and the power in general that America does have in the region.
Got it. All right, hey, when we come back, we need to talk about, what God is doing in the land and a couple of questions related to the third temple. So stay with us, friends. For joining us on the Line of Fire, Michael Brown here with Kobe Ferguson from Jerusalem, talking about Israel, the Jewish people, some things happening in the land. Boy, I'm looking at headlines in Jerusalem Post, and the tension between America and Israel is rising. Prime Minister Netanyahu's brother says, don't count on Jewish Obama voters. Things are heating up, getting very interesting. Kobe, thanks for being with us today. 866-34-TRUTH. Only questions we're going to take today relate to Israel, the Jewish people. So that's all we'll be dealing with on the phone today, 866-34-TRUTH. Just a couple of programming notes. Tomorrow, at the beginning of the show, I'm going to give an appreciation of Calvinism. With all the debating I've been doing on this subject as a non-Calvinist, I want to tell you seriously, not sarcastically, seriously, things that I appreciate about Calvinism. That'll be the outset of the show tomorrow. And, of course, we'll be answering questions on Friday. So just giving you a heads up. And then next week, Tuesday, March 23rd, I'm scheduled to have part two of my debate with Sir Anthony Buzzard on the deity of Jesus. Okay, Kobe, one thing that Christians who are into end-time prophecy, especially dispensationalists, pre-trib rapture friends, they will really be focused on the whole issue of building the third temple. And we're getting closer to building the third temple, and you've got the institute, which is training people. They're training people for priestly ministry. They've made most of the vessels that would be necessary for the temple, you know, per scale, according to their understanding. And a lot of Christians think this is a major topic of focus within Israel. What's your take? That your average Israeli, your religious Jew, your Jewish believer, are they thinking much about the issue of a third temple?
And to be concise, absolutely not.
So, across the board.
Out of the mind.
All right. Now, why do you think that here, okay, you live in Jerusalem. How far are you away from what would be the Temple Mount area?
In miles, probably 2 miles.
Okay. So, and you're saying that even there, 2 miles away, in your neighborhood, that there's not a lot of talk about the rebuilding of the third temple and all this. This is not a big issue.
No, it's funny. I've talked with quite a few people about this in the last few days because it was one of the, you know, things that radical Muslims here were saying that was supposed to happen. That's what the Jews were trying to do right now, was to reestablish the third temple. This is the first step in it. And even the rabbis were responding kind of in shock. Oh, yeah, the third temple. Oh, okay. Well, since you bring it up, you know, they said they forbid to even think on it because for a number of reasons, a lot of different theological reasons, there's no red heifer and different things. But and they we can't even let the thought of the third temple enter our mind. So that's even the religious who they would be more prone to that than anybody else.
Amazing.
Now, the seculars probably don't even know that there is such a thing proposed in theology at all. Uh-huh. You know, I was asking a friend who came, a total umbra secular lady came over our house yesterday. I was asking her about it. She said, I said, you know, what about this crazy sect that people are around? And like you said, they're rebuilding, reestablishing utensils and all these things for worship in the temple. And she says, but it's just a few people. I don't even know how to call these people. This woman was raised religious herself her whole life. And among the Messianic believers, Jewish believers in Jesus here in the land, it doesn't come up at all. Maybe there's a lot of different takes on it. Maybe some of them are similar to Christian theology, but it just does not enter in, I would say, to enter any of our minds on a daily basis at all.
Amazing. And no surprise, which is why I asked the question. Okay, you're an American, you're an Israeli. You've lived in both climates. Why do you think that there's so much interest in this in the prophecy circles here in America and basically no thought of it at all among the believers in the secular society in Israel?
That's a great question. I think a lot of it is maybe sentimentality. There's a romanticism concerning Israel. Israel's, you know, the Holy Land, but, you know, when you live here, the nitty-gritty, the daily life here, and the needs. I think it a lot of that kind of is, I mean, I used to think of these things a lot more before I moved here. Theology is interesting, but then when it hits the ground running, you know, tachlis, as we say in Hebrew, you know, what's the bottom line? And you realize, wow, when you're working for souls here, as we are, and really trying to spread the gospel and really focusing on things that the Lord said, you realize, wow, there wasn't really much of a mention of a rebuilding of the third temple, some obscure passages, maybe some people think it's clear. It's not that clear. And especially in terms of the Great Commission, the words of we believe Yeshua is the Messiah, Jesus is the Messiah, and he didn't make mention, he actually mentioned some things quite the opposite, about the destruction of the temple. And then later on we see that we are to be the living temple of God. So I think when there's really eyes open, I think it's kind of a lesser, and even among, like I said, the Orthodox, the religious, who they cry day and night for Geulah, for redemption, for salvation. Of course, they're believing it comes from the Father and not through Jesus, as we do, but they don't even mention the rebuilding of the third temple. That comes later in their minds. It's a more abstract, and it's very debated as to how they
right. Yeah, and basically, you know, when the Messiah comes, when the Messiah is revealed, these things will happen. So that's where their greater focus is going to be. All right, so you mentioned what your emphasis is on. A couple minutes before the break, tell our listeners what to you are some of the most significant or exciting or positive things you see happening, even things just through your own life and ministry, be it among Arabs or Israelis or the Orthodox. What are you seeing? We know there's battle. We know there's war. We know it's difficult. But what are you seeing that's real life, tangible, encouraging that's taking place?
Well, what I've seen over the last 10 years transpiring here is a groundswell. I would call it a grassroots movement, in particular among the youth and young adults, going from kind of nominal faith, the few believers there were, to, you know, I think I shared it with you before, that the first youth conferences we were involved with, we saw 120 youth gathered together on the Sea of Galilee last year. There were close to 1,000 youth and young adults that gathered together in a field to worship the Lord at an event we call the Alav Conference, which means unto Him, which is a worship and really a call, a gathering to holiness and to really just live on fire for the Lord. So these are and they're sprouting up. It's not just with us. There are other groups that are seeing rallies and things of this nature. So I would say the beginning of an awakening. Something's moving, something's stirring, and you can run into prayer meetings all the time. And this is not with tourists. Used to be you would have a meeting, kind of an on-fire, passionate meeting here in Israel, and there'd be maybe two Israelis kind of somewhere stuck in the corner speaking to each other about how weird it is, but somehow they believe still in Yeshua. And the rest of them are foreigners or Christians that have gathered together. But now the tide's turning. I mean, we're going an Orthodox home this weekend to speak to somebody who's interested.
Wonderful.
All right, listen. Just were unheard of years ago.
And this is real life, front line witness to what's happening. Okay, we come back. I want to talk about the Arab people and the pressure that believers are under in Muslim land. God of light, welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. Michael Brown with my special guest, Kobe Ferguson, live from Jerusalem, 866-34-TRUTH. Appreciate Kobe being with us the entire broadcast. He and his wife, Shani, were students of ours in our ministry school. And Kobe, just a quick plug for our school, for FIRE. When you came to our school, which was then in Pensacola, you were only saved a couple of years. You didn't have a burden or vision for Israel. And you said it was while being in school that God really placed that in your heart.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my parents had always told me about Israel. And I remember even things about Israel, war and different things. And I really understand as a kid, but I remember my parents always said we need to pray for Israel. But when I really came to the Lord in a strong way, something started to happen just, you know, kind of naturally. But you in particular, and there were other people in the school that really had a heart for Israel, really communicated, you know, solid thoughts and scriptural concepts to that. And it just really... I mean, they would actually be prayer meetings where we would pray at different stations and different, there were different flags that we gathered around for different emphasis, and I would just go over to the Israel flag and just weep and weep and weep and travail, which were new experiences to me altogether, but it would just come to me, just come on me whenever I would go there, and just, and to this day, you know, when I pray for Israel, it's with tears, it's with great moving, and I believe with great understanding in a lot of ways, because of what you guys did. So if anybody's interested in fire, you definitely will get heart for Israel and a real burden for Israel, even more than anything intellectually. And a lot of good schools will pour an emphasis in Israel and give a good foundation doctrinally and theologically. But you will get something that is in your gut, something that
that's where it counts. Yeah, that's where it counts, because when the rubber meets the road and you run into the tension, the pressure, the difficulties, the challenge, whatever the call is, if it's not in the gut, in the heart, you won't make it. You talked to us vividly just about life in Israel with, you know, maybe a bomb in the park where your kids were playing the other day, the security that you have to go through just to go into a coffee shop. And again, folks, go to yeshuaisrael.com. You'll find a link at askdrbrown.org. Click on the line of fire. What happens to someone, let's say, in Gaza? There's always complaint about Israel and the way Israel runs things. Let's say you're in Gaza, which is under Palestinian/Muslim control, Hamas governing it, places where the Palestinian Authority is in control. Let's say you're a Muslim and you become a Christian. What happens in that society, in that environment?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned this. Just last week, areas near, I can't go into some specifics because it's clandestine and it is very hush-hush, the details of it, but just last week, some people we work with, Arab believers, new believers, were all rounded up, and there's been basically an edict put out among the Palestinian territories, the West Bank areas. And they're bringing in every known believer. And some of these people, I don't even know how they know that they are, because they're so new to the faith. But they all got letters in the mail, come to the police station to be interrogated. And, you know, with a heavy heart, I say this, because we haven't even heard back from some of them. We believe everybody's alive, but interrogation is not just heavy questioning. Usually with beatings before they even ask you any questions. So that is happening right now. This just happened last week. So it's a big deal. And you pay the price to be a believer in a Muslim-controlled or dominated society. It's real.
If someone in the family, let's say a father, decided to kill a son because the son had converted to Christianity, would that father be prosecuted by the authorities for that in one of these countries?
Absolutely not. There's actually even a fast track to becoming a sheikh or a elder or a highly respected elder. If that's part of your resume, and they call them, you know, honor killing. So if you have a few of those under your belt, then you're really highly esteemed because you believe in the integrity of the Quran and the integrity of the Muslim faith. And so it's actually something to be esteemed and not to be shunned in a lot of these societies.
Yeah, you know, I'll just say this, then we've got a break, and when we come back, just take a couple minutes to talk about your interaction with Arabs firsthand. But it's so mind-boggling to me, Colby, that here in America, during the war in Gaza, there were all these protest rallies where you'd have radical feminists, gay activists, and extreme leftists protesting Israel, standing with Hamas, and if they were there in a Hamas-controlled place, that'd be the last march they ever engaged in. All right, friends, stay with us. We'll be back. Thanks, folks, for joining us on The Line of Fire. We've had a special edition of the show today devoted to talking about Jerusalem, the Jewish people. If you missed any of the broadcast, go to AskDrBrown.org, click on the line of fire. The show will be uploaded before the day is out. And you need to hear a report about the Third Temple from the perspective of Israel and Jerusalem. Colby, just in the last few minutes we have, I've got two questions for you. First, some of your own interaction now working with Arabs, what doors have opened with that? That's one. And then two, what listeners could do to really be a blessing to those laboring in Israel?
Okay. Well, recently, which has been kind of a surprise to us, we've been laboring among the Sabras, that is the native-born Israelis here for years, my wife being one herself. And we actually have a Sabra guy sitting on my couch right now as we talk to you. But that's been our heart for so many years. But really, we've been seeing a shifting. In addition to that, we're reaching out to more Arabs. And a lot of it had to do when we moved here to Jerusalem. We've lived in Tel Aviv for a number of years, and we just noticed, wow, the population here is, you know, largely Muslim and Arab, not just Christian Arab, but mostly Muslim. And we actually have had a lot of interaction. Even our children are in a school. There's some Arabs there as well, and they're studying Arabic. So it's just a natural way, we realize, to reach out and become friends with a lot of these people. And they're just beautiful, beautiful people. And we just realize that God's heart is for the Jew and the Arab, the Jew and the Gentile. And we actually wrote an article, you can catch it on our website, that Arabs make the best Gentiles. And it's a story we just realized that some co-workers we have that are going into areas around Jerusalem where they're all Muslim, and God is miraculously healing and saving entire small villages.
Mm.
And this is firsthand information I'm giving you, not hearsay. So our interaction, that we're seeing dreams and visions just plenty. I mean, they'll say, well, we had visions. We talked to a friend of ours who witnessed to a Hamas member. The guy told him, something entered me when I was 17 years old, and I've hated everybody since.
Mm-hmm.
Can you pray for me? And, you know, maybe you'll have to do a show about this next week, but they cast a demon out of this man, and the entire village came to the Lord because of that. We're talking 40, 50 people. This is just right outside of Jerusalem. So stuff is happening at a just remarkable at a remarkable pace, but like we said, you know, the persecution is very real. So there's two sides fighting. The Lord is fighting for these people, and the other side's fighting for them as well.
Yeah, and ultimately, this is going to be the final battleground, friends, and it's really critically important to pray for the salvation of the Jewish people, just as you pray for the gospel to go to the nations, for the Great Commission to be filled, just you pray for the body of Messiah, the believers around the world, to be one in Jesus, one in Yeshua. Pray for the Great Commission. Pray for the salvation of the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And pray in particular, if you want to send money to Jewish ministry, send it in particular to those laboring for Jewish souls in the land of Israel. Hey, Colby, thanks for being with us. Give our love to Shani and the family. Look forward to being with you in the land pretty soon.
All right, look forward to seeing you.
All right, we'll be there. Hey, friends, thank you so much for joining us tomorrow. Don't miss my appreciation of Calvinism in the opening segment on The Line of Fire, and pray for the salvation of the lost sheep of the house of Israel.